Okay, welcome back all. We are now going to discuss our final topic for this month's board meeting, accounting policies. And I give the floor to Siobhan.
Good morning, everyone. So I'll just summarize each paper in order and then pause at each of the questions we have for board voting and discussion. So starting on agenda paper 20A, in August 2019, the board published the exposure draft disclosure of accounting policies, which proposed amendments to IAS 1 and IFRS Practice Statement 2. The comment period for the exposure draft closed on the 29th of November 2019, and the staff presented a summary of that comment letter feedback to the board at its February 2020 meeting. So, in light of strong support for the project from respondents, we do think that the board can now move forward with finalizing the amendments to IAS 1 and IFRS Practice Statement 2. So, agenda paper 20A really just explains our approach to the project redeliberations in agenda papers 20A through to D. So, our question for agenda paper 20A is, does the board have any comments on any of the issues covered in this particular paper?
Sue?
Thanks, Siobhan. Just one question, please. In paragraph 18, you talk about the intention to look at whether we can align the effective dates of these amendments and the work that we're doing on definitions of policy, accounting estimates and errors. When you say align the effective dates, will we also look at aligning the actual publication of the documents in line with what we've been trying to do elsewhere to streamline things a bit for stakeholders?
Yes, we can definitely look into aligning the publication dates to help with our stakeholders.
Yep, that's definitely the plan, Sue.
I wasn't sure because effective dates is one thing, but the publications obviously are separate. Mary?
Thanks. I have something that I think is a wording question rather than a substance question. So I'll flag it here and then say it may be something that's best dealt with offline rather than being discussed now. Which is the paper went back and in Appendix B made me look again at the wording around the IFRS 7 amendment. I think it's right that we have something in here. I agree with the objective that we're doing. I'm just wondering whether we need to bring in all the words to paragraph 21 that includes some repeats of the words that are in paragraph B5. And I say this because I'm focused in paragraph 21 on trying to keep the wording as closely aligned as possible with the modified wording of the materiality definition that we have in IS1. So I just want to ask the staff to take a look at that as you're doing the drafting afterwards. It may be that in the end it's better that we stick with what we proposed, but I just had a bit of caution around that. Thinking about some of the comments that we got in also about this particular item. So that's sort of a fuzzy comment. Siobhan, I see you nodding your head, but I don't know if you have any response or first thought on that one.
Siobhan?
It's definitely something that we can work on during drafting to refine the wording in IFRS 7, just to ensure that we're sending the correct message.
Can I comment on that? Can I comment on
Yes,
that?
Sue.
So this was something that, as a staff know, I sort of was focused on before we put the exposure draft out, but I really only noticed it a bit late in the process, and so it went out as it was, and then sort of, to me, unexpected, not surprisingly, quite a few people commented on it because there was sort of a little bit of tension between what we're doing in IAS 1 and what we're doing in IFRS 7. I agree with Mary, we should try to minimize any disconnect, but I think that one of the challenges we've got is that we set out to do a project, as far as I thought, where we were trying to replace the word significant with material in IAS 1. And then when we got to the ED, suddenly we're proposing changes that could have been quite a big change to the requirements in IFRS 7, which was never the focus of the project. So I guess we're just trying to balance the line between materiality focus in IAS 1 and not signalling a bigger change in what we expect under IFRS 7, where I think even where it's not an accounting policy choice, where, for example, you've applied IFRS 9 and you have to measure something in a particular way, typically investors need to understand how things are classified and why to make sense of the financial statement. So I think the sort of starting assumption is, unlike most other areas of accounting, having this information is particularly important in financial instrument land, which is why we always had that in IFRS 7. So I hear what Mary's saying, and I know we need to be careful, but also I think we need to be careful not to make a really, excuse the pun, material change to IFRS 7 in the context of a sort of something that started mainly as a clarification and concept in IAS 1.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next paper. Siobhan.
Okay, so moving on to agenda paper 20B. Many respondents to the exposure draft expressed concern that the board is assuming that primary users have a greater knowledge of the requirements of IFRS standards than is the case. Some of these respondents also sympathized with Martin's alternative view to the exposure draft. So paragraphs 11 to 29 explain our approach to addressing this feedback. In particular, per paragraph 30, we recommend that the board adds an example of a circumstance to propose paragraph 117B of IAS 1, which would clarify that when the accounting required by an IFRS standard is complex or may not be generally understood by users of financial statements, material accounting policy information could also include standardized descriptions or information that duplicates the requirements of IFRS standards. So our question for the board is, does the board agree with the staff recommendation?
Does anybody want to talk? Yes. Gary, yeah. Gary.
Yes, I was taken off mute. Thank you. And by the way, Siobhan, a very nice set of papers for this meeting. I have some concerns about this recommendation. You know, not huge concerns, but let me explain my thinking. I think we've been trying years to move away from clutter and detail and extensive details and footnotes that don't necessarily add a whole lot to the financial reporting. And I think our experience most has been mixed. You know, we first put out amendments to IS-1 back in 2014, about decluttering, unshackling the preparers, as we used to call it. And I would say results are probably mixed, in large part because old habits die hard. I think we got to sit back and think a lot of accounting is complex, and much of it's going to be complex to at least some users. So where does one draw the line? I appreciate this is just an example. Of things you could do, but we don't prohibit anybody making immaterial disclosures. We don't prohibit anybody from doing voluntary disclosures if they think it's relevant. So I would look at this as a preparer and say, this gives leverage to auditors or regulators for me to continue detail that my judgment isn't necessary. So I would prefer, if we're gonna go this route, at least perhaps mention the basis, that this is something you could do, but I'd be a little bit loath on making it more prominent in there. So that's my thinking. Again, it could always do voluntary disclosures if you think it's relevant to the user population for a particular company, but I'm not necessarily sure we need to encourage it. Thank you.
Sue?
Oh, thanks, Hans. Siobhan, I do agree with the staff recommendation. I think it would be helpful to point out that in some cases, this understanding is important and important enough to meet the definition of materiality, which is the important point. I think my only sort of caveat in terms of communication with the market and also with drafting is that I agree with that because it's consistent with what we proposed. If you look at what Martin said in his dissent, I think he went actually slightly further. So in his dissent, I'm quoting you, Martin, it says, even if such accounting policies are not important enough to be assessed as material, because they would not be expected to influence the investment decisions of users, he thought there was a case for their disclosure. As I read it, your recommendation is not to go that far, but rather to say in some cases it is so important in itself, you know, repeating what the requirement is would be material, but that's not the same as saying it's important to understand, and even though it's not material, it should be in here. So I think you're going towards Martin's analysis and his dissent, but not as far. Is that a fair observation?
Yes, it is. That's what we were aiming for.
Yeah. Combined with materiality, I agree with the recommendation.
Françoise? Françoise, you might be on mute. We cannot hear you. No. Cannot hear you. Perhaps Françoise can try to fix it. Mary, in the meantime.
Okay, thank you. I also support the staff recommendation. I had thought about the alternative of an objective, and while in concept I like that, I think the concerns that Gary raised in his comments are the ones that led me to say that the staff alternative is, I think, the better, safer approach to this point, particularly at this point in the particularly at this point in the process of making this amendment. And I think the nuance that Sue brought out is important and that the staff has actually captured in it its wording. I'm thinking that it gives the right encouragement to be flexible. Now, given the issue we were just discussing on the previous paper, somebody might use this also as another reinforcement for saying why measurement basis information for financial instrument might be material on a recurring basis, while for a year in which there's a significant change because of, let's say, a new standard, it might mean that there's more in the accounting policies about that change that's maybe carried forward for another year. But then this specific point is the reason why you might look at that again and say, well, it was important in the transition period, but it's not material 3 years out, and therefore we drop it, so it's not like you're committed to it forever and ever once you have made that disclosure of information about an accounting policy. So I think it's a very smart and appropriate supplemental point about materiality. So support the staff recommendation.
Françoise, let me know when you're on the phone and have a connection, then we will let you back in. In the meantime, Tom. Tom?
Sorry, I have a concern. And I just want to come back. I appreciate that the staff have moved some direction toward Martin's concern, although it's a bit difficult now because we don't want to move all the way, we claim. And I'll come to that perhaps at the end. I don't think that's my main point. I thought it was still important to preserve the value of the improvements with respect to material. And I like the four remaining examples from paragraph 117B. I'm looking ahead a little bit, but A through D. And I look at these ones as telling you what is material regardless of the technical knowledge of the user. Unless the user has inside information, they need to know A through D. And that's substantially different from especially the second half of the OR. Just coming down to it here. The second half of the door may not be generally understood by users. So when we looked at everything that everybody wrote in, some people said, well, what if you had a local gap they were familiar with that was different? So for generally understood in that context, you would need to tell those users. And what if you have a lot of retail investors? So this is very much entity-specific, jurisdiction-specific, and specific to the nature of the set of users you have, whether it's generally understood in the context of your set of users. And it's not material in the sense that to actually make your normal decisions, you would really need to know it, which applies to A through D. And so I had a concern, just to kind of repeat what A through D were. They were, you know, was it changed? Were there alternatives? Did you develop it in the absence? Or were there significant judgments? Doesn't matter how much accounting knowledge you have of the IFRS standards, you need to know those things. And I think those are the most important. And I was kind of sympathetic to Martin's distinction in that sentence that Sue quoted, where he said the disclosure of accounting policies could help them to better understand an entity's reported, even if those are not material. So the way he writes that sentence, there's some that are material, which I think are the A through D, and then some that are just going to be helpful to your users. And the users, as I said, is going to be firm-specific and context-specific. In this regard, I like the CFA's suggestion. They said to prioritize the material ones, but to allow continued disclosure of these helpful disclosures for people in understanding the IFRS standards. And they said, you know, a better solution would be to require preparers to use a materiality threshold to prioritize. And I would take that as basically identifying the material ones, either by putting them first in an initial section, or if you've scattered it, you could identify them, but still allow the others. Because I think by putting this other thing in as material, what you'll now have is these helpful things that will be mixed in, and they won't be clearly identified. And so we lose the materiality advantages we've created, and we don't really solve the problem. And then we're going to get people trying to, I think, all the way to from what I read of those letters, they will probably try and use the second half as helping people understand. And so you could have a lot of these immaterial mixed in with material, and you wouldn't be able to distinguish them clearly. So I would actually like something more along what the CFA suggested, and perhaps something a little bit closer to what Martin suggested with respect to just allowing some freedom for people to help their users understand, but make sure that they tell the users what are the material ones.
Okay. Does the staff want to, yeah, Rachel, yes, please. Rachel, you're on mute.
Sorry. Just to respond to Tom's comment there, what we were trying to do is to emphasize that we're trying to identify is when standardized descriptions would actually be material to the users of the financial statements. So it's not about having a set of disclosures that are material and a set of ones that are potentially helpful but immaterial. What we're saying by adding that additional example to 117B is that in some circumstances, standardized descriptions will provide material information and should be provided.
Okay. I think we have Françoise back in. Françoise.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry for the inconvenience. Well,
no
I'm
problem.
Very sympathetic. If I understood it well, and with what I've heard so far, I question whether my understanding is correct. But I very much sympathize with the response that the staff tries to bring to the concerns that have been expressed by a number of people. However, I disagree with, or at least I do not support the proposal for a number of reasons. One, I think, and the main one in a way, being that I don't think it's bringing a criterion that can be applied in any manner, because even among ourselves, I don't think we would have the same perception of complexity, what our standards are complex, those that are not, or that are less. And, I mean, users are so much different. How come can you decide that users are such a homogeneous group that they would understand some standards and not others? So I think we would bring a criterion that would not necessarily bring us where I think the staff would like to take us. What I understood was that our proposal was perceived by some as prohibiting, in fact, or wanting to eliminate all forms of extract of IFRS requirements, and that we should, in fact, make clear that whenever those extracts may be helpful in a number of circumstances, then it should be done, and you should emphasize that. And to reach that outcome, I would recommend that we do not follow the staff recommendation in paper 20B, but we combine, we have another recommendation in the next paper that provides a possible amendment to the exposure draft that we have, and that explains that an entity-specific accounting policy choice would be more relevant, more useful than just a replication of what IFRS says. And my proposal would be to supplement this change that the staff is proposing in paper 20C by adding that, nevertheless, it may be useful in order to increase the readability, provide the context in which entity-specific choices are made, to repeat part of IFRS requirements, so that we would show a balance between entity-specific information, of course, is to be privileged because that's what's most useful, but that doesn't mean that IFRS extracts have to be eradicated altogether. Some of them could be helpful being repeated in order to bring the context of the entity-specific choice made by the entity. That would be my proposal, and I hope it finds some echo.
I see Siobhan nodding. Yes. Okay, then Tadeu.
Thank you, Hans. I agree with the staff recommendation of adding an example as described in paragraph 28. But I'm just wondering whether the example itself would still not allow an entity to include standardized description when it believes it's necessary because of paragraph 117C that still says that we should not apply include a standardized description. What I would suggest is the staff, when drafting the text, to include in the end of paragraph 117C, and I know that there is something further proposed in agenda paper 20C. And for example, I like the comments from Mary, for example, the first year of application, when, for example, the volume of the transactions become material, in some of these cases might be interesting, including some of this standard description. But I just think that just adding the example X in 17B would not be enough. I mean, that we should make clearly that I might be use a strong word, but it's something rare or not often should be a very specific situation to be included. I think that it would be interesting to be included when drafting the text. Thank you.
Rika and then Martin. Rika?
You're on mute, Rika.
You're still on mute. Okay, let's go to Martin in the meantime.
Okay, thanks, Hans. Mine, clearly I support the staff recommendation because it goes into the direction which I expressed in my dissenting opinion, but clearly my, it is not fully what I was concerned about. But as I said, it goes into the right direction, and therefore I support the staff recommendation. Thanks.
Okay. We wait for Rika to come back in. In the meantime, Nick.
Thank you, Hans. I think here we're trying to find a middle way here. What's the appropriate level of compromise between our original proposals and what we heard back from a number of stakeholders and the views expressed in Martin's dissent? I am still sympathetic to the views that Tom expressed in terms of not wanting to disguise those issues where there are really very material changes or there's been a choice used or some judgment used by simply repeating the requirements of the standard. And for me, and indeed, as Gary said, there's nothing to prohibit an entity doing that if they feel that's helpful. For me, the answer is perhaps more about how a company organizes its reporting. And there are good examples out there where a company focuses on the material aspects of accounting policies as we originally proposed, and then provides a separate appendix if they think it would be helpful to some users, which may repeat the requirements of our standards. And I'm not quite sure yet that we've got the balance right with this proposal. So at the moment, I'm not convinced one way or the other.
Okay, I think we have Rika back in. Please, Rika, try again. We still cannot hear her. Okay, Anne.
Thanks, Hans. I'd like to put my voice in support of Francoise's proposal to make use of 117C to accommodate the feedback that we've got, that on some occasions people want to be able to use some of the text that is standardized text. So I've listened to lots of arguments on either side, but I'm hesitant to support the staff recommendation because I worry that by adding that extra piece in there, we're taking away from what we're trying to achieve with the earlier ABCD, where we're focusing on what it is that is in the accounting policy that makes it material. So I would prefer to leave that, and therefore over in 11C, I think we could add in there, perhaps along the lines Francoise has suggested, that somebody could be repeating some elements of standard IFRS text if it fits here that they need to do that. And also in here in 117C, we're assuming that people are working hard to explain things as clearly as possible. So in terms of using their own words to explain things clearly, I think that's an element of 117C because it's entity specific, and that may sit aside the words coming from IFRS standards. I would support Sir Jean Francoise on this. Thank you.
Rika, are you on the phone now?
Hello? Yeah. I'm still on mute.
Are we?
No. Go ahead.
Can I? Okay. I support the staff proposal in connection with they consider no addition to the disclosure objective and the guidance in the standard is necessary. And also, if it is really necessary to include the example, I do not disagree with the example staff proposed on this paper, but I think maybe Anne and Francois also said, I think while drafting, I just wondering if you can check if your refinement of the paragraph 117C might be helpful for the user of the standard to understand what we really intended about the omission or and I mean omission and inclusion of the necessary information. I think this point is especially important when the user of the financial statement will have to look at and compare among the financial statement prepared in accordance with the multiple gap. So I think clarification on this matter is really necessary, especially when the standardizing information is also needed to understand the specific accounting policy, or maybe that can be underlined information to understand the disclosure provided in the other part of the financial statement. So I think improvement is necessary, but I think defining the wording might be helpful in paragraph 170C.
Okay, Martin, you wanted to come back in?
Yeah, I just forgot something, because when I heard from some people that said, okay, we are not prohibiting that preparers would disclose not material accounting policies. I think that is right. But on the other hand side, we have currently issued guidance that, okay, that material information should not be obscured by immaterial. And if we make it so clear here that material accounting policy information are sourced only where you have done accounting policy choice or a new accounting standard, whatever, I think that is a kind of a risk for preparers that auditors and enforcers will say, okay, if you use standardized information about accounting policies, that now the relevant, the material stuff is obscured. And my main example is, let's assume, I think really IFRS 17 is not an easy standard. And if an insurer is not, I think, allowed in the second year, when it is not new, the second year to include standardized wording about IFRS 17, something is wrong, because I would not expect that primary users in the second year already understand all the requirements in IFRS 17. And therefore, that is why I said in my dissenting opinion, it is helpful to understand. And based on our definitions, in the second year of applying a standard, and if it is not an accounting policy choice, it is not you, it's not entity specific, I think we don't see it as material. And that was my main concern. And therefore, I think I would not say, okay, if people can do it voluntarily. Because as I said, we have currently issued this kind of that material information should not be obscured by immaterial. And if you clearly say that standardized information are immaterial, I think that is a huge risk for preparers if they're including that. Thanks.
Who?
Thanks, Hans. So I'm hearing a lot of different points of view, and I think there's quite a few areas of agreement, but I think there's also quite a few nuanced differences of opinion. And Rachel, I don't have the benefit of being in the room, but I feel almost like we might need to bring something back to confirm wording, because I think it's quite important that we actually all understand what it is that we're agreeing on. So maybe I'll leave you to think about that for a moment. But just a couple of observations. I agree with, I think, some of the, I agree with this basic staff recommendation, because I think that we've got quite a strong view back from people that there could be circumstances, and the one that Martin just gave us is probably a good example, where just to, it really is material, just understand what the requirements are. And there could be those situations. But on the other hand, we do want to encourage people as a general proposition, not just quote what the standard says, and to be more specific and to provide more information about the particularities of their facts and circumstances. We want that specificity and that refinement that 117C talks about, and we don't want to sort of imply otherwise by adding this in. So I can see those two different points of view. So I wonder whether it's a matter of being clear in the drafting that while there will be situations where just understanding the standard requirements and the standard can be material and acknowledging that could be helpful, we need to somehow build in a message that there's still a general, it's still generally the case that something that's more tailored to the entity is the more useful source of information for investors, and that should be the sort of primary focus so that we don't create a conflict between those two things. And I think that's partly what people are talking about, but I think the devil could really be in the detail in terms of the emphasis and the wording to make sure we actually are not talking at cross purposes.
Mary?
Let me build on what Sue said, and I'm saying that deliberately so that you know that this is consistent with what she's saying rather than trying to spin it a different way. And the point that I am remembering is guidance that we provided at the time we introduced the discussion of obscuring, and I'm wondering if it was perhaps introduced into the materiality practice statement rather than the amendments to IS-1, so I leave this with the staff to think about, that talks about how the organization of the information is part of the answer to how inclusion of material of information that may not be material does not obscure the material information. And I think that, as Sue said, this discussion has a lot of nuances in it, because I think the staff appropriately in this the staff in this recommendation is appropriately focused on trying to identify when some summary of the requirements of IFRS standards may be material, and that is different from may include other information that may not be material, but as long as it doesn't obscure material information, maybe something that the entity thinks overall it should include in the package of the financial statement. So I just wanted to remind you about that guidance, about the way things are presented. As I said, I think it's in the materiality practice statement that may be useful for doing what Sue recommended, which is knitting these different aspects together.
Okay. Daryl, finally, and then I would like to ask Rachel whether she thinks that bringing the paper back with all the nuances that have been expressed during this meeting, whether that would be a good idea rather than vote now.
So Hans, very quickly then, just agreeing with where Mary and Sue are heading with this. I think I came into this agreeing with the staff recommendation. I'm not sure anything I've heard subsequently has led me to disagree with the staff recommendation, but I think a lot of the views seem to be skating just on either side of it. And I think the drafting in this is going to really, really matter. And so I think we need to have a feel for what that is going to look like in order to understand whether we're talking about big changes or little changes in the way that this is playing out. So broadly, again, same as what Sue and Mary have said, the nuances are important, and I think something should come back.
Okay, Jen Chow, and then Nick, and then let's round it off.
Thank you, Hans. I will not repeat how my fellow members has said that. Just as Sue and Mary mentioned, I think first I agree with staff to address this issue, because this concern raised by many stakeholders, we need to address this issue, particularly some standardized information, maybe material to the users. I do recommend to improve some drafting issue here, particularly when I read paragraph 28. It sounds like it's based on whether the accounting required by IFRS standards is complex or not. I think this spaces maybe could be improved a little bit further, because sometimes people always say those new standards are easier, way complex, they will repeat again those requirements. But I think it still should be based on whether those information are really material, those information are meet the definition of materiality, and those information really, provide useful information to users, even their standardized information. And secondly, I look at the proposal in paragraph 28, because we propose that we're using the word or. I wonder whether it should be and, that those accounting is complex and may not be generally understood by the users of the entity's financial statement. I worry about that if we're using all, maybe those information will be too broad, not identical what we are going to address those standardized information, what would be material to the users.
Okay, Nick.
Thank you. So I agree with Mary that the organization of the information is key here, and that we can reconcile our requirements with not to obscure material information with perhaps providing what I consider to be this additional information. But I think the real problem is it's a very subtle expression of our requirements. I'm not sure it's fully appreciated in the words that we have today, that subtlety, and how we bring more emphasis to perhaps that the organization of the information is key. Thank you.
Okay. So, Rachel, I think you might agree that it's probably best to bring this back. Yes? I think there's a lot of support for the spirit of the proposal, but we need to see the wording a little bit adjusted. So let's not vote, I would suggest, and just bring it back to the next meeting.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. I think there is an issue here that we probably need to address, because I think there is a bit of a difference between what we were trying to do with our recommendation, which was to focus on the idea that sometimes these standardized descriptions could provide material information, versus what I've heard from, I think, some of the board members, which is that perhaps it just when that information is helpful, they might also want that included, and they want to make it clear that that wouldn't be prohibited as long as the information is organized in a way that doesn't obscure the genuinely material information. So I think that's quite a sort of nuanced message that we'll probably need another board paper to try and get the drafting right for.
Is it
worth taking a vote on whether the basic idea that this is a question for you, Rachel. Is it worth getting a read for you in terms of you and Siobhan in terms of the new paper to get a read on whether there's agreement with this basic idea that sometimes it is material to provide, a repetition, if you like, of the information that's in the IFRS requirements as part of this? Is it useful to at least have a steer on that?
I think that would be helpful. I think I did hear a majority of people in favour of that idea, but an indication from the board, I think, would be helpful.
Can we see if people support this idea?
It'll still come back, but just for direction.
Yes, Françoise.
Just before we take that vote, I think it's a useful direction to give to the staff. I would support the question raised by Sue, but changing, I would not put material in it. So to me, it's helpful, useful, maybe useful, helpful, but it would not be material.
Okay, but
It's a question of helping the readability, helping the understandability.
Of why I wanted to get that show of hands, because I think understanding whether we're shooting for a materiality cut and it's more about articulation, etc., or whether actually the board means something more like what was in Martin's dissent would probably be a really helpful steer for the team in terms of drafting. So that's why I was suggesting a show of hands on materiality, knowing that some people might not put their hand up. Is that okay for us?
Yeah. Can I see who supports this general idea?
Of materiality. Not just usefulness. So, Martin, you don't support that, even though you agreed with the direction initially?
No, I would prefer if it is we agree on usefulness. But if we don't agree on that, I would agree on this if it is material. So, I think it is, as I said earlier, I think it is in the right direction, but I would go further.
You'd still like further. Okay, so you're more in Françoise's camp, maybe. Okay, can I get a show of hands on materiality?
I have 8.
Oof, skinny. Okay. Right, well, that's something to work with, team.
Thank you. We'll certainly bring all options to the board as well when we bring the paper back.
Yeah. Rachel, still useful to continue with the papers?
I think so. There is some interdependency with the decision on this one, but I think it is still useful because I think there's a general agreement with moving away from the position that was potentially seen in the exposure draft of the standardised information not being provided and providing more clarity around the fact that you can provide the standardised information. So I think we can still probably take votes on the other papers.
Okay, so please continue. Shoban?
Okay.
Or...
So,
yeah?
Moving on to agenda paper 20C. Proposed paragraph 117B of IS1 includes a list of examples of circumstances in which an entity is likely to consider information about an accounting policy to be material. Most respondents to the exposure draft supported this proposal. However, we did have some respondents express concerns about the specific circumstances proposed. And paragraphs 8 to 11 explain our approach to how we address these concerns. Paragraph 16 to 22 discusses our approach to addressing the feedback about the interaction of proposed paragraph 117B with the requirements in paragraphs 28 to 31 of IS8, which address the disclosure requirements for similar circumstances. So for those reasons discussed in paragraph 16 to 21 of the paper, we recommend that the circumstances described in paragraphs 28 to 31 of IS8 are not added to proposed paragraph 117B. So the first question on agenda paper 20C is, does the board agree with staff recommendation in paragraph 22?
Who wants to come in? Do we agree with the staff's recommendation? Question one.
I think Rika wants to come in.
Rika.
Thank you, Sue. Yeah, thank you. I just want to make sure with the staff about the wording included in the paragraph 117BA. I think wording material change is not used outside this paragraph among the others, including the other standards. So I just wondering if it is necessary to use the term of the material change here. I think if we use a new term, and then that can lead to the another question of the application of that term. So if the use of the material change is not necessary to define or make a small tweak within this paragraph, I prefer in that way.
Okay. All right. Can I see if we support the staff's recommendation?
Or Chao wants to come in.
Thank you, Pat. Yes, agree with staff's proposal. Just, I think just one clarification. The reason given in paragraph 18 and 19, we said that the proposed amendment, you know, proposed requirement in paragraph 117D of IS1 only provide guidance on when accounting policy information might be material to an entity's financial statement. And the paragraph 28 to 71 of IS8, we say that those paragraphs only provide guidance about what accounting information might be material to those circumstances. But when I look at the paragraph 28 and to 71, actually all those paragraphs, starting from when those circumstances apply, and then what kind of accounting information are material. So actually those paragraphs address both when and what. So I don't think they're inconsistent there. So I hope that in the basic conclusion in the future, we address that those paragraphs actually they are consistent each other. The situation addressed in IS 8, addressed in our proposed IS 117G, actually is consistent each other, not to make impression there is a different situation we address.
Okay, are we ready to vote? Can I see who supports the staff's recommendation?
That would be all. 14, yep.
Yeah. Okay, go on.
So paragraph 23 to 30 go on to discuss our approach to addressing feedback that proposed paragraph 117BE of IS1 addresses what disclosures should be made about material accounting policies, and as such is not helpful in determining when accounting policy information is material. Proposed paragraph 117C of IS1 was developed to provide guidance about what information about an entity's material accounting policies is most important. Consequently, we are recommending that the guidance proposed in paragraph 117BE is combined with that proposed in paragraph 117C of IS1. So our second question is, does the board agree with staff recommendation in paragraph 30?
Sue?
Thanks, Hans. I don't necessarily disagree, but I don't really agree necessarily fully with the feedback that we received. I couldn't understand why we got the feedback, but when I look closely at 117BE, I can see why we did, and it's because it's sort of got two pieces to it. So as I read 117B little e, in the first instance, it says one of the circumstances where it could be material would be where you apply the IFRS standard in a way that reflects your specific circumstances. And then we go on in that paragraph to say, for example, by explaining how the requirements are applied. Now, the for example piece is very similar to 117C, which so I can see why there's overlap. But I think the first part of E actually is an example of where it could be a material policy. And it's not about how to describe it. It's just an example of when it could be material that I don't think is covered by the other fact pattern. So if I was to use an example, let's say that I had, a bank who enters into a type of financial asset which is different to its peers. So because it's got a very particular type of contract, when it applies IFRS 9, it comes up with a particular type of measurement that's required by IFRS 9 that at first instance is different to its peers, and you need to understand the type of contract and how IFRS 9 relates to that contract to understand their financial statements. Let's just say they've got a lot of these assets. In that case, because of the way I need to apply IFRS 9 my very unusual contract, I think that could be a material accounting policy, unlike their peers in the market. And it's not because of judgment, it's not because of choice, it's not because it's new, it's not because of anything else on the list. It's just their particular circumstances mean that actually it is a material accounting policy. And that's different to 117C, which says, explain to me how you've applied IFRS 9 to that contract. It's just flagging to you, hey, this is a material policy. So I think 117B little e was setting out a case where something is material, which is different reason to the other ones in the list. So I think, it's only a list of examples. It's not meant to be exhaustive. But for me, that actually was a useful example of when a situation could be material. And I agree the for example bit probably shouldn't be there because it's not really the point. It's a different point. But I think the first bit of E is a relevant thing for this list and not for 117C.
Could I just ask Stu a question there?
Sure.
Yes, yeah, Rachel.
Yeah, I think what you're describing there, Sue, is an example of a situation where something would be material in nature. It's it's the nature of the particular transaction or the particular item that we're accounting for that is making it material. It's the fact it's different from everything else that its peers are doing, whatever. Would you be happy with the staff proposal combined with the other staff proposal, which is to highlight that accounting policies can be material in nature as part of the overall recommendations, so sort of bringing in that nature factor elsewhere within the proposals?
Maybe. I think it depends on the drafting, because
okay.
The last paper focused quite a bit on, is it complicated and therefore would you expect an investor to be able to understand it? This is more that there's something that's sort of a little bit surprising because of the way that IFRS is applied to this particular type of contract that's a big deal for this company that makes this policy itself material. If as a result of where we end up on the other paper, we think we could capture that, then yes, because it's not an exhaustive list, but I guess it's a conditional one, because I just worry that if we delete E and if we sort of buy into that actually E was what 117C already said, it's actually not true to me, at least for the first part of E, and I just don't want to lose that concept in the way we redraft. So as long as it's captured somewhere, it doesn't have to be in the list labelled E for me to be happy, but I would like not to lose the idea. So if I could sort of leave you that project, I'd be happy with that.
Okay, thank you.
Françoise.
Yes, thank you. In fact, I came in this morning with in support for the staff recommendation, and that was on the basis that to me, I could read E, in fact, being encapsulated into all these judgments and assumptions that the entity has to make. I must say that I'm sensitive to what Hugh has explained, and it's a very fine line. I mean, I don't know how to address this, but whether to keep E ultimately or write something else, but we have emphasized, and people have agreed, that it's not because transactions are material that the accounting policy dealing with them would be. So we have to really, if the nature of things came into play that could qualify the transaction as material and not necessarily the accounting policy that's applied to them. So. I'm sympathetic to what she has said, even if I was prepared to support the recommendation fully. And I still, you know, if D can be considered as including E, I would be satisfied.
Okay. Can I see who supports the staff's recommendation in question two?
Chengwu, I can't see your hand. I think it's up. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
So I see 11. Oh, sorry.
Right.
Martin's up. So that's 12.
All right. Okay. Final question.
Okay. Paragraph 31 to 34. Discuss our approach to feedback that proposed paragraph 117B should include an explanation that materiality depends on the size or nature of information or a combination of both. So we do recommend that proposed paragraph 117B is amended to include that reference. So our third question for the board is, does the board agree with the staff recommendation in paragraph 34?
Anne wants to make a comment.
Thanks, Hans. I had a problem with question three because I didn't see how an accounting policy or the information about an accounting policy can be material by size. I can understand the nature side to it, but I don't see the size because it's the underlying transaction that has the size element. It's not the policy. It's not the information about the policy that has the size element. So I would support saying something about nature if we thought that was important, albeit the fact nature is mentioned in IAS 1, IAS 8, the conceptual framework and the practice statement. But I wouldn't agree because I don't think size is the right word to use here. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. I think one of the things in 117BE is that in order for an accounting policy to be material, its related transaction, other condition or event has to be material as well. So I think we already communicate that, but the, just bringing in the wording from paragraph 7 of IAS 1 will help a little bit with understanding, because a lot of our stakeholders were concerned that accounting policy information could be omitted just because it's material by nature or it relates to a transaction, other event or condition that is material by nature only and not by size.
Okay. Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hans. I generally support the staff's proposal, but I also have a question about the size, the wording of size, but the question is different. I agree with to address so-called size, but I'm wondering why we're using the size rather than, amount, because I think some stakeholders address this issue and ask whether we can, keep consistent with paragraph 121 of IS 1, but that paragraph actually using the word amount rather than size. I think it's different. Size is more broader than amount. Yeah. From accounting term perspective, I think it's better to use amount, and also it's this wording will be consistent with the wording used in IS 1.
Okay.
So what's the intention behind that? Yeah.
If I could just respond, Jim Chow, I think in the drafting, we'll probably lean towards keeping the wording consistent with what we've got in the definition of material of IS 7, which refers to magnitude of information, not size. Sorry.
Okay. Tom?
Yes. First of all, I'm in favor of bringing nature in, and I'm just wondering, though, if that will get us where people want to get us, or we may not want to go there, but there are two big changes from the old situation, and I think Anne put her finger on it. It's very hard to think about the magnitude of a policy. You have to think of the related transactions. But in the old 121, it sort of really was quite specific, and it touched on some things that people are interested in seeing, at least in the letters. And it said an accounting policy may be significant because of the nature of the entity's operations, even if amounts for current and prior periods are not material. So it sort of asked you to think about nature quite directly in the old world. In this world, in 117A, we now say accounting policies that relate to immaterial transactions, other events or conditions, are themselves immaterial. So it's when I put those things together, it seems to me that the ability to get a policy as material will be much, much more difficult. And so one way of doing it is to, I guess, ask staff the question, is that our intent to make it that much more difficult to have a policy by nature?
That was not our intent. So I guess 117BE was intended to cover situations which are material by nature as well. But I guess with us moving 117BE out, and then the staff recommendation in 20B would have still kept that material by nature in, because there might still be an example where something is only material by nature, which does require an accounting policy explanation. So we hope to be able to keep an example of something being material by nature in 117B.
Mary?
Yes. Oh, could I
yeah, Tom.
Follow up? Yeah. So
yeah.
I guess like I'd be prepared to vote, but I think we need either an example or a real example, possibly by nature, because I think people will read that and it's going to be very, very difficult. And I'm going to vote in favor, but I'd really like the staff to think about an example where a policy is going to be material by nature, and the amounts currently are not necessarily sufficient to get you there. And whether, seriously, do we want that? And if we don't want it, can we make sure the wording won't preclude the, or cause that result to occur?
Okay. Mary, finally, and then let's take a vote.
Okay. I support the staff recommendation. I just want to go back, not so much on the vocabulary, but supporting the idea that it's not, we shouldn't focus too narrowly on the amount. And so if I look at 117B little a as exposed, it says results in a material change to the amounts included in the financial statements. The example I can give of when an amount was not material, but the change was, is for many companies, the adoption of IFRS 15. So the amount of revenue recognized might not have changed by a material amount, but the identification of what the performance obligations are, the timing on an individual contract might have been quite different. It just may be that given the total number of contracts or other things, the change in the revenue amount might not have been material. So with that in mind, I think 1117 capital B little a as exposed was incorrect to have the word amount in there, but it can take a lot of explaining. And think about whether so I support the staff recommendation. I just wanted to give that example of when there can be a material change in accounting policy, even if the amount recognized in the financial statements does not have a material change.
Okay. Can I see who supports the staff recommendation? Question 3.
Francoise?
I haven't raised my hand.
Okay, so 12.
Okay. All right. Final paper.
Okay, so moving on to agenda paper 20D. Most respondents to the exposure draft supported the proposal to add examples to IFRS practice statement 2. That illustrate how the concept of materiality can be applied in making decisions about accounting policy disclosures. However, many of these respondents also expressed concerns about the conclusions reached in those examples and how they align with the proposed guidance in IS1. So paragraphs 16 to 22 discuss our approach to addressing the feedback received specifically on proposed example S. We recommend that proposed example S is not amended to detail all entity-specific accounting policy information that could be identified as material to an entity's financial statements. Instead, we are recommending that proposed example S is amended to align the content of the example to those changes recommended in agenda paper 20C and B, but we can change that. Clarify that the timing of revenue recognition is considered to be a significant judgment, and also conclude that information about the allocation of the transaction price to performance obligations could also be material accounting policy information. So our first question for the board on agenda paper 20D is, does the board agree with the staff recommendation in paragraph 22?
Any comments, Mary? Oh, no, that was the previous discussion. can we vote? Who supports the staff recommendation?
Mary?
Yes, sorry, I have a camera on, but yes.
Okay, 14.
Okay, Siobhan.
Okay, paragraph 23 to 32 then discuss our approach to addressing the feedback received specifically on a proposed example T. So we recommend that example T is redrafted to add clarity to the example and better justify the conclusions reached by better linking the content of the example to the proposed amendments to IS1, including those changes recommended in Agenda Paper 20C, and existing guidance in the conceptual framework, the definition of material, and IFRS practice statement 2 about an entity's primary users and how to identify their common information needs. So our second question is, does the board agree with the staff recommendation in paragraph 32?
Can we vote?
No.
No, okay. Who wants to talk? Anybody wants to?
I had a possible concern. It's Tom.
Yes, Tom.
I was just trying to find the second paragraph of the example. And I think somewhere we say, which I don't have it immediately in front of me, that they hadn't done an impairment for the last few years, and therefore it's not going to be material. Is that right?
Yes, they hadn't had an impairment expense in the current year or the previous.
And I just wonder that in this particular case, in this world where entities have been accused of failing to impair when they were supposed to, that your own behavior of not impairing is evidence that it's not material. It's one of those ones where, the dog that didn't bark almost is people are watching and saying, why aren't they impairing? You know, things are looking pretty bad. Their price to book is less than one, all sorts of signals that people use, and no comment. So I'm just wondering about that as whether we want to give that signal in an example, because I think it's a major issue in financial reporting.
I think it's important to stick to what we've got in the background information. And also it's important to remember that we're saying only part of the information is immaterial or has been assessed as not material. It's not all of the impairment accounting policy information. So in our conclusion, we do say that what they had identified as material information for their primary users had been disclosed as part of other accounting policies, which is why then they didn't have a separate impairment accounting policy with that just simply duplicated the IFRS standard.
Anne?
Okay, thanks.
Anne?
Siobhan, we've talked about this example T. I have a problem with it because it's really hard to illustrate this standardized description or duplicating the requirements. It's hard to find the policies that are not material on that basis when we go back to what we've been doing with 117B, where we say, is there judgment involved? Is it an entity-specific accounting policy? Is there an accounting policy choice involved or a change of accounting policies? So when I looked at T, and I'm really uncomfortable with using impairment because impairment so often has judgments, and even when they haven't done an impairment, they've still had to exercise a lot of judgment about not doing it. So I've been looking at that as an example and worrying about that. I know you say that they've given that information somewhere else, but let's say, take that part of it out and just say, this is supposed to illustrate a case where someone, an entity, doesn't make the disclosure because it would only be standardized. And so I've been trying to find an example that would work better than impairment. And so I was really struggling with trying to come up with something that illustrates the other case. So S illustrates where the policies should be chosen, applying the four-step materiality practice statement process. And I'm trying to do the reverse here, and I'm really struggling with it. I'm not getting there. I mean, we've got two things happening in T, and so example T can stand up because you say the required disclosures appear somewhere else. But I'm just wondering about the underlying case of T, whether impairment's a good illustration of what we're trying to show. Thank you.
Daryl?
Thanks, Hans. I suspect I might be heading down a little bit of the same line that Anne was, but just if I can ask a confirmatory question, I guess. Siobhan, for me, reading what was in paragraph 25, which were the suggestions made by some of the respondents, I agree that we don't pick up or take further C, but one of the suggestions they made was this idea that we need to make it clearer, and I think this is where a little bit of Anne's point was. We need to make it clearer that one of the reasons why we thought it wasn't necessary to disclose the policy was because information was disclosed elsewhere. Now, you pick up on 25B and C in the rest of the text. You don't seem to pick up on 25A, other than when you talk about the recommendation, you talk about the board redrafting the proposal. Redrafting the proposal to add clarity. And I just wanted to confirm that is one of the things you were going to pick up in the redrafting, which I think, having looked back, that might be a valid point.
Yes, it's definitely something that we're planning to address during drafting. Okay.
Thanks.
Rika?
Yeah.
Rika, and then Françoise.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Hans. Yes. I have a similar concern with Anne and Daryl mentioned already, especially about its accounting of the impairment, and then a lot of judgment involved. So I think the first thing is we have discussed about how the standardized information might be helpful to understand the specified information that might be a material to the user is one point. And another point is it's really difficult to understand the to what extent of the information in accordance with the requirement of IS-1, paragraph 122 and 125 is included in this particular company's statement. So depending on the extent of the robust disclosure included here, the decision might be different one or another. So I have a little bit concern about this, because the understanding of the extent of the information included in accordance with IS-1 might be a little bit different in the practice. If there's something always on the accounting policy section, so it's a kind of the combination and integration of the message. So,
Françoise.
Yes, thank you. In fact, I note that example T has modified links very closely to the issue that we have left alone to come back. So I think we should bring example T back with the next paper and being consistent with whatever decision recommendation we have been made.
Okay, Mary?
I support the staff recommendation, but wanted to make a suggestion as I reflect on our discussions today. First of all, I think at this point we should not move away from it being an example about impairment. I'd be concerned because what we're trying to do in example T is a very difficult thing, which is to illustrate when disclosure is not required. And I feel we benefited a lot from exposing this example and hearing how different people have read it. And I would hesitate to make a fundamental change in the fact pattern when we're trying to do a difficult thing. So I understand the sensitivity that others have had about using impairment, but I think we could do a bit more with just a few words to emphasize that we are saying there's certain pieces that don't have to be disclosed as opposed to nothing. So that if you look at example T as marked up on page 18, under application, the staff has expanded the discussion, which I think is very helpful, about disclosures that might be made under significant judgments and assumptions. And I think that that is a very useful addition. And then I think that when we come down to at the very bottom of the page, the part that begins consequently, the entity concludes that a separate accounting policy for impairment would not provide information that could reasonably be expected to influence decisions, i.e. would not be material. I think what we're focused on is there would not be additional information that, you know, to be provided, because I don't want in any way to suggest that you would not have to do what you discussed the entity has done in significant judgments, disclosures about impairment in the area of significant judgments and assumptions. So maybe you could strengthen the link to information in addition to that provided in connection with significant judgments and assumptions, because all we're saying is the overall requirements of how IS 36 works, information about those requirements is not material information in the context of an entity that has not recorded an impairment. And so highlighting that this is additional information may help address some of the concerns that people had. So I think it's really a very small change in terms of additional information, but link it back to those additional words that you've put in about disclosures being made under significant judgments and assumptions.
I see Siobhan nodding. Can we vote on this question? Can I see who supports staff recommendation? Okay.
11.
Then let's move to the final question of this topic and this board meeting.
Yep. So paragraph 33 to 37, move on to discuss our approach to the feedback that it would be useful if more examples were developed for the practice statement. So for those reasons discussed in paragraphs 33 to 36, we recommend that the board does not develop additional examples for IFRS practice statement 2. So our final question today is, does the board agree with the staff recommendation in paragraph 37?
That seems to be the case. Can I see hands? All right. Thank you very much. If I'm not mistaken, that brings us to the conclusion of this topic and this board meeting. I thank everybody who has followed our discussions virtually. I think we were again able to have a productive board meeting, even though it's more difficult than we see each other live. Still, I think we are pretty much able to have good discussions. And it is quite amazing how much of our work can be done as usual. But of course, we keep on having in mind the challenges with which our stakeholders are confronted. And we will continue to make sure that we don't give them more work than they can handle. But from our side, we can actually do quite a bit. That has become clear to me. Okay, thank you very much. I thank the staff, I thank the board members and all the stakeholders who have followed our discussions. And we'll see each other next month.